You know, and I feel like we're still going through the transition, right? Because then you have to think about some of the post-COVID effects that will be with us for a while and what that really means for higher education writ large, but certainly for the campus as well. So I'll say to you just quickly that when I was at California State University, the role that I played at the system level was really helping to create policies, right, that could really best understand what should be the ways in which we're going to have a viable educational enterprise while shifting to the virtual modality for which, you know, in many cases, many of the campuses did not have, they had the infrastructure to move wholly. But the reality is that this was the first time that any system as large as California State's was moving wholly.
Welcome to Innovating Together, a podcast produced by the University Innovation Alliance. This is a podcast for busy people in higher education who are looking for the best ideas, inspiration, and leaders that will help you improve student success. I'm your host, Bridget Burns. Each week, I partner with a journalist to have a conversation with a sitting college president, chancellor, system leader, or someone in the broader ecosystem who's really an inspiring leader. And the goal is to have a conversation to distill their perspective and their insights gathered from their leadership journey. Our hope is that this is inspiring and gives you something to look forward to each week. This episode, my co-host is Inside Higher Ed co-founder and CEO, Doug Lederman.
Today, we're joined by Lauren Blanchard, who is the president of the University of Houston Downtown. I got to know Lauren when he, in his previous gig as executive vice chancellor for academic and student services at the California State University system. So welcome, Lauren.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
And I got to meet President Blanchard because we were both part of the California Recovery with Equity Task Force that was formed by Governor Newsom. And so in the midst of COVID, got to talk about the ways that California could strategically position to try and actually come out ahead on some of the longstanding issues that it had been wrestling with. So it was a great pleasure to connect with you at that time and to learn a bit about your perspective. But today, I want to make sure that folks understand just kind of how unique your leadership experience has been in the last few years. So first, you're at a system leadership position, very strong, vibrant system, and now you're in a strong system, but you're now at a campus. I'm super curious about how that, how your perspective has changed, perhaps, as a result of now being in this different kind of position.
So good question. And thank you again for inviting me to participate here today. You know, the interesting thing is that if we even go beyond the work that I've been doing at California, so I was doing at California State University and now at a campus level, you'll find that I had a pattern of working within a university setting and then moving it to a system level, then back to a campus level system. And a lot of that really, at first, I probably wouldn't say that it was systematic. It was just the fact that, you know, just having an opportunity to move from one opportunity to another. But within time, it did become more systematic. And what I mean by that is that, you know, having an opportunity to really be at the ground level on a campus and providing a lot of leadership to areas that matter a whole lot around student success, around faculty excellence and high quality campus operations, that those were three signature pieces that mattered a lot. But I knew as well that in terms of some of the learnings, especially around student success and the relationship between student success and equity and justice, that those areas really needed to find a way that there could be some policy behind them, that if we really wanted to scale some of our learnings and implement strategies that could really help universities throughout either the state or the country pay close attention to those strategies in order to move universities forward, that became really the rationale for why it is that I moved in and out quite a bit between a campus and a system. And now, given the fact that this is the first time that I've been in a presidential seat 15 months in, but who's counting? The reality is that I can see the work that's being done around running a campus, how important it is to have that system perspective, largely because of the fact that when you are in the process of really giving leadership to a lot of efforts that center on students, that center on faculty excellence, that center on making sure that we stay focused on our work in partnering with not only businesses and agencies, but also understanding our connection to the city of, in this case, the city of Houston, that it really does take strong policies that need to be in place that can augment and give, if you will, support to the work that we're trying to get achieved to make sure that ultimately that our students are going to graduate with the knowledge, skills, and dispositions that empower them for readiness for either graduate or professional school, the workforce, or for further self-exploration, but that also we are preparing them to be leaders in their fields and leaders in their communities. And with an institution like the University of Houston, which parallels the characteristics of the student demography of the students in California, meaning that many of them come from underserved backgrounds. The vast majority of our students are first generation, and many of them have challenges around equity, not only racial equity, but looking at economic equity, gender equity, that it becomes really important then that they too learn the skills and the tools to become advocates for justice and equity as well.
I find that when I was at the system level, I didn't understand why there was always kind of a tension with campuses quite so much. I was just kind of like, don't you understand? Like, we're getting pressured by the legislature. We're making you, we're defending you every day in the state capitol. And then only when I got to a campus did I understand it was really a function of the design. Of the how it really there was just a, on both sides, a lack of empathy and understanding. So it's helpful to see that you kind of already prepared yourself by spending time beforehand on campuses. Doug?
I was going to actually ask a little bit more about the, because I was going to go to some of those tensions, which obviously are in a lot of places. And a lot of it is around sort of Cal State's interesting because it's so big and statewide. Most of the institutions, there's definitely some differentiation among them, but they're all in a general category of regional comprehensives, et cetera. Whereas most systems, including UH, although I don't know as much about it, tend to do best when there is differentiation. And I'm just curious about sort of maybe just give us a second or a couple of seconds on UH downtown where you are and sort of how it fits into the system and whether, you know, your having been at a system helps you understand and appreciate kind of its place within the larger system.
Mm-hmm. Great question. So just for context, California State University, 23 universities, as you indicated, regional, comprehensive, some that had a very strong focus on research as well. The University of Houston, by comparison, 4 universities. So it is the smallest system that I've worked for, but a very important one in terms of the mobility of students, but that more importantly, the work that we do together, the 4 universities that center on really trying to get students ideally where they need to be. So that when I say need to be in terms of their careers, in terms of their life goals, because then it not only helps Houston, but it helps the state of Texas as well. So the differentiating factor between, you know, the campus and the system perspective, as you're pointing out, Doug, is understanding that, yes, we are not an R1 university, the University of Houston downtown. The main campus is the flagship and is the major research university. The other 2 campuses are neither research one universities, although there is a desire, obviously, amongst all of the campuses to ensure that we've got a very strong research infrastructure in place. I'll just say this quickly. Where I really see the difference between the University of Houston downtown and the University of Houston main campus is that as the main campus really does, they're driven by the agenda to become increasingly within the top 15 of research universities. That my aspiration is that just as you've got the R1, that we're looking to become a G1 university. And I know people say, well, what in the world does that mean? And we're talking about generational differences. And the fact that you heard me say the vast majority of our students not only come from underserved backgrounds, but they also are first generation. And that, you know, we really are working to ensure that each student does have as its goal the earning of a degree, but a degree of value that really allows them to meet their goals, but that we're not just doing it for them, but it's also the fact that we engage families here as well, so that they really understand the difference that this degree makes for an individual, but also for their entire family, and also looking forward to the generations to come. So there is this notion of really understanding the role that a campus like ours has, not only in producing in large numbers the nurses, the teachers, the police officers, you know, all of those essential services that we need here, but also then understanding that it then triples and quadruples in the effect of having their children and their children's children understanding not only the impact that one person has had, but it also inspires them to know that they too can acquire their degree from the University of Houston downtown and also make a difference for their families and for the community that they live in.
When we were analyzing for expansion for UIA campuses, we looked at all of the University of Houston campuses because of the sheer volume and diversity of students served. And definitely the downtown campus, you really have, it is traditional urban in that you have really the students that we prioritize, low-income first-generation students of color in a large scale. So yeah, it's a beautiful portfolio, I think, the UH system in terms of what the various campuses and what you have to offer.
And being the fourth largest city in the country, probably makes you bigger than some state systems and states, right? I mean,
the field is large, right? You know, and the reality is that very much like California, that, you know, there was really no true student access issue. That for us, yeah, I mean, there is some competition, but the because the field is so large, there really is no need to feel like we're being competitive with one another.
Yeah. Well, I want to shift to part of your unique leadership journey, not just having spent time in Louisiana system and the Cal State system and now Texas in the University of Houston system, but and coming to a campus, is that you also transitioned roles in the midst of COVID. And I am fascinated by leaders who made that choice, and because it was a very difficult choice to make. And we need more leaders to be willing to do that because we're seeing such a high turnover right now. There are so many vacancies, and folks are a bit more skittish, I think. So I'm curious about, now that you've done it and you made it through and relocated in the midst of everything, what advice would you give yourself 2 years ago about how to do that effectively and how to build relationships effectively in the midst of all of this?
Great question. You know, and I feel like we're still going through the transition, right? Because then you have to think about some of the post-COVID effects that will be with us for a while and what that really means for higher education writ large, but certainly for the campus as well. So I'll say to you just quickly that when I was at California State University, the role that I played at the system level was really helping to create policies, right, that could really best understand what should be the ways in which we're going to have a viable educational enterprise while shifting to the virtual modality, for which, you know, in many cases, many of the campuses did not have, they had the infrastructure to move wholly. But the reality is that this was the first time that any system as large as California State's was moving wholly to the virtual modality. And so there were lots of policies and other implications that we had to look at. And that's what I was responsible for in helping the campuses to navigate that. But it's a big difference between being at the policy level and being at the practice level, right? And so that has been the biggest learning, you know, in coming here. And then also understanding that policies in California were different than policies here at the University of Houston. I would say that my biggest discovery was understanding just how important it is to have ongoing professional development support for faculty, staff, and for students, that regardless of what the life event is. This obviously was a pandemic, so that was just probably one of the biggest swings in terms of life events. But that, you know, there are other events that occur, more natural disasters. You know, here we are in Texas, and so you've got hurricanes. And of course, I went through Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans and realized then what that really meant for higher education and all of the retooling and, more importantly, all of the strategizing that it took to make sure that we would not only lose our students, but that, more importantly, that we had to maintain our reputation that we had in terms of really providing a high quality educational experience. So regardless of what the life event is, it really is important to engage in regular professional development so that you're really preparing yourselves in such a way that when this life event occurs, that you don't feel like it's turning your world upside down. That we've been preparing all along for these kinds of events. You know, one of the things that I know that was a big takeaway when I worked at California State, especially with all the wildfires, is that once you're right in the heart of it, that it's hard to know those things that you really have to do in order to make sure that you are notifying not only your campus community, but the state and national agencies. So for instance, you know, it affects financial aid. So somebody's got to be in touch with the U.S. Department of Education. It means that you're going to have some days off and that you won't be able to engage in instruction, which means that you've got to get in touch with the U.S. Department of Education again. So lay out in a format, here are all the things that when you know that you're going to experience a disaster of this type, all the things that you will need to take care of, have a checklist so that it's a no-brainer that you've got it there. But in addition to that, within that checklist is really a regular professional development that we're providing that also helps students so that they know that, because part of our psychology is that because students really spend so much time using their devices, be it a phone, be it a computer or a laptop, the reality is that it doesn't mean then that they know how to engage virtual education successfully, especially if you're talking about first generation students like the ones that we serve at California State and here at the University of Houston, that it really does take quite a bit of engagement to get students where they need to. So the biggest learning for me has been really setting up a series of professional development workshops that we're doing right now on a regular basis, regardless of what the situation is, so that in the event that the next situation occurs, that we feel that we are much more ready than we have been when we first encountered the pandemic. And that, more importantly, when we hit these seasons of hurricanes and fires and earthquakes, that we know exactly what it is that we'll need to do in order to be best prepared to keep the university moving forward.
That's interesting. I thought you were going to share things about like, well, here are the things that built the most community on Zoom, and here's how I would do my move. But one of the things I'm listening and I'm catching from you that I hadn't thought about was, you know, when we create the 100-day plans for new presidents, when we try and transition them and set them up for success, it's still in that space of first date where we are not sharing where the bodies are buried. We're not sharing all the hard stuff. And I don't think that prepares folks to lead in times of turmoil. I think that as an industry, we are going to have to shift how we hand the keys over to a new president so that they could actually lead in the midst of a very difficult moment, rather than right now where it's like, you're going to meet all these donors and you're going to see, like, this is how we say hi to you, because that really just won't work. And if we're going to have, that's part of probably why some of the hesitation for transitioning in the midst of COVID, because it's difficult. And then knowing how to lead an institution going through chaotic change when you're still new and don't even know people's names is nearly impossible. So that was super helpful.
Yeah, one of the other big changes and differences between the two states you've been operating in is the nature of the politics is pretty different, but both states are very political. And I'm curious, I think we're seeing public university leaders, public higher education leaders in a lot of states having to deal with what appears to be sort of increased willingness on the part of state officials to to look hard at the institutions and how they operate. And I guess I'm interested, having from you, having operated in two states with two very different political cultures, but both pretty intensely political, how you think about the interaction between higher education and how you think about leading an institution through the politics that can affect state institutions.
Again, another great question. And I'll say to you that the question kind of reminds me of my own upbringing. You know, so I had parents, both of whom had never completed college, and often underestimated the real power that they held in our household in raising up higher education as the advancement to our careers and a pathway to make sure that our lives, my sister and mine, would be better, would be different than the lives of my parents. You know, it's kind of interesting that growing up, I never realized that we really were impoverished, but I never knew it because my parents made so many sacrifices to make absolutely sure that we didn't feel the brunt of what poverty meant. They believed wholeheartedly in the civil rights era, in the civil rights movement. And in that the way up, the way to lift your families up was through education. And what's interesting is that really hasn't changed now, that when you look at what matters most to not only build communities, but build families with an understanding of what it takes to move young people from one level of economic and or social mobility to the next, that the empowering factor is education. Regardless of the race that you come from, regardless of the economic situation that you encounter, regardless of gender, environmental circumstances, that what stands tall still today is the ability to acquire a high quality education that really then lifts you out of your circumstances and puts you in a different position to not only lead, but to make sure that your life circumstances are actually very different than that of your previous generations. That psychology, that thinking, that's deeply embedded in me, it transcends politics. I know that sounds strange, but you know, if you lead with that level of vision and understand, as it has been for me, the power of higher education in really advancing people to the point where they become advocates not only for themselves, but advocates for their communities, regardless of whatever the situation is that is troubling us. You know, right now, obviously, we know that we're seeing more racial discrimination and gender discrimination than we've seen before. You know, certainly I'll be 60 next month. You know, it's kind of interesting because the civil rights era happened when I was a young kid. And so some of that discrimination that we heard about, it's kind of interesting to actually see it now firsthand happening, and to still understand that what lies at the top of all of this, when you climb up 6,000 feet above all of this and you look down, you really realize that education remains the key to lift us out of this and to get us beyond and to move us forward.
That's perfect. I completely agree that focus on the bread and butter of our work, the actual like core of it, and it does, it really doesn't matter where you're at. So I want to shift to what advice has been most valuable to you in your career that, yeah, I'm curious about what has been useful and who it came from.
What I live by is the advice of one of my former supervisors, Dr. Sally Clausen, who was president of the University of Louisiana System and Commissioner of Higher Education, as well as my current chancellor, Renu Couture. You know, both of them made it very clear, and still today with Dr. Couture, that results matters most. And that, you know, you can talk about a lot of things, but if you're not focusing in on the results, then the talk becomes really cheap. And so that's what I have aspired to do in every place where I've worked. And that is to really look at impact, of the role that I have been in order to really move the needle substantially forward. One of the value added aspects of my role here was the fact that I was able to lead the campus through the development of a new strategic plan, with seven principles that lie in front of us to move forward, not only to implement so that it has an impact on this campus with some real metrics in place to make sure that we're able to meet them, but also really understanding our role as a campus that has that direct connection in with the city of Houston. A lot of the issues that we see that surround us on a daily basis, we can take homelessness as one of those, and in environmental erosion as another, that we see ourselves right in the middle of that and connecting with the city in order to move those areas forward in ways in which that we benefit not only from the intellectual capacity that our university brings to the city, but also looking very carefully at the cultural capacity that we have as well in order to move us forward. So, it's really about results. Certainly, I know that you're aware, Bridget, that when at California State University, that we spent a lot of time with Graduation Initiative 2025, which had three big goals, and we showed evidence of how we were meeting those on an annual basis, not only to the state legislature, but to the state of Texas, the state of California. And those three big goals were to dramatically increase graduation rates, to eliminate equity gaps by race, ethnicity, as well as socioeconomic status, and to help the state of California meet its workforce goals of 2030, where there was a need for 1.1 million more baccalaureate degree holders, and the role that the California State University would play in helping the state to meet those goals. And so we've got similar goals that's happening right here in Houston as well. And not only in terms of the equity piece, but also looking very carefully at what are the needs, the workforce needs for Houston and the greater area, and the role that we are playing in providing some of those critical workforce areas that you just heard me mention before around criminal justice and around teaching and around nursing, that all of those are really important areas that we play a major role in helping to fill and can show through metrics the progress that we're making on an annual basis, but that more importantly, really helping to ensure that there's an understanding that as we sit right here in the downtown area of Houston, Texas, that we really believe and know that we can be the anchor that this city is desiring to have.
Well, we hope that you are successful. It has been delightful to hear a little bit of your perspective and kind of how you think about this work on this Monday morning. And we so appreciate you being our guest. It's been lovely to have you here. Doug, thanks so much for joining us. I know that it was a miracle that it happened. So always great to have you as the co-host. And for those of you at home, look forward to having another conversation in 2 weeks with Stephen Percy from Portland State University. So we hope that you have a wonderful week, and thanks so much for joining us.